Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is Jonathan Hutton of Outkick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, a little rebranded Outkick 360. Hutton, always appreciate you for joining us. Got to get your thoughts on the most recent report from Daniel Jeremiah on the Move the Sticks podcast. The Titans are exploring trading up for the third overall pick. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to do it, but let's say if they do, how would you feel about it, and how realistic do you really think it is that they're going to do that?
First of all, always enjoy coming on with you guys. If they do it, they are also, to me, moving Ryan Tannehill. I think if you have a quarterback that were to fall to you at 11, and that's not quite the fall, you can have the luxury of saying, you know what, this guy needs he's big on our board. We're having a luxury this season of having Tannehill ahead of him. Let's go. Again, I'm using the Chiefs model that I've brought up multiple times with you guys. However, if you're trading up from 11 to 3 to jump ahead of Indianapolis, who is quarterback needy, you're going to pay the price. And the price tag is going to mean that guy needs to start. That guy is your starting quarterback. You are definitive in that. No different than the top quarterbacks of years past. So I would say I'm all for it if they are sold on one specific player. But it's also interesting to me that the Panthers have already traded up to number one, and there's discussion now of Arizona at 3 before you really even know which quarterback is going to be there. And to me, that's – even though we think it could be Richardson, right? We think we know the two quarterbacks that are going 1 and 2. I still, there's so much uncertainty in the draft that, yeah, it's Arizona. They're the one team that doesn't need a quarterback in the top 5. But man, it is a roll of the dice if you're in love with one specific quarterback. And to move up to 3, it would have to be Richardson or Levis, because the thought is Stroud's going number 1, and all of us think we know that Bryce Young's going number 2.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. I've seen a whole lot of parody about Will Levis. The 33rd team had a mock draft coming out that had the Titans trading up to 3 to take Will Levis. And then we've seen mock drafts with Will Levis going as low as 14. Bruce Feldman's most recent mock draft has Will Levis going at 20. What do you make of Will Levis?
It has the Titans trading to get Will Levis at 20 after picking at number 11. So there's a lot of differing views. That's the interesting thing to me. Once you get past Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, I think there's a varying degree of opinions on the other guys.
No doubt. But this is also, to me, we are now getting back to the even area of Will Levis. Had we discussed Will Levis prior to Mel Kiper, for whatever reason, in January, calling him the number one player on his board, the headline wouldn't be that he's falling to, 15 or 20. I think he's around that range of an NFL quarterback in this draft, quite frankly. I like Will Levis. I don't think he's awful. I think he's a first-round pick. I just don't think he's a top-5 pick. And I think where we're seeing him mocked now, and as guys, close up shop on free agency and start talking to people about the draft and where they're coming to on their conclusions after meetings and in-person trips for Will Levis – I think this is about where he should go, quite frankly. And we always see the overreach at quarterback. I think Levis, if he goes top 10, that's the overreach in my mind right now before I see any trades on paper. I do think he's a top 20 type skill set. I don't think he's top 5. And Stroud and Young would be that for me. And then Richardson, you can make the argument based on the ceiling.
Now, Hutt, keeping on the theme with the quarterbacks now, you've mentioned Stroud and Bryce Young, and we all know those two guys, I think, are head of shoulders above anyone else in the draft when you're talking quarterbacks, because those guys, we've seen the talent on the field for a long period of time. We've seen what they can do on the field in their strength as well as their weaknesses, and we still deem those two the top two quarterbacks in this year's draft. Where does Hendon Hooker fall? Because I think he's going to end up, at least in my eyes, I think he's going to end up a late first-round guy And he might just turn out to be, I'm not going to say necessarily a steal of the draft, but where he's drafted and what he ends up doing, he's going to be gotten at a value.
Well, no question. And here's the other thing, Mace, and it ties into having a luxury of can you play someone else right now? I think he's, while all signs are everything's great, he's right on schedule. No one's ever behind schedule whenever they're rehabbing an injury. Everyone's either ahead of schedule or right on. And I've heard nothing to indicate that it's anything worse than what the original timetable was for Hendon Hooker. He thinks he's going to be on the field during training camp. But still, I mean, I think with him, you want the clock to move quickly because of his age. But if you draft him in the first round, you have the fifth-year option, and I think that's beneficial for a quarterback like him. And look, he's not the perfect quarterback, but he's in line with the group we're talking about, with Levis and Richardson. The one area I don't know how scouts specifically feel, how general managers on the league will feel about this, but you know he's got one of the highest sack rate on pressure of any of the five QBs. The best is actually Richardson, followed by Stroud and Bryce Young. All of them are 12% sack rate or less whenever they're pressured. And Hendon Hooker's at 26%, followed by Will Levis at nearly 30%. So there's a big drop-off there based on when teams brought the blitz. That indicates you don't necessarily need this guy to start in September. At worst, he is a great backup option for a team. At best, you need the fifth-year option because he's going to be your quarterback. And I think it's worth the investment based on the value of the position.
Now, looking at these receivers, there are some, mocks out there where the Titans take Jackson and Jigba with the 11th pick. Now, I think that's a little bit too rich and too high for this year's receiving class. But what you have seen from, say, the top two or three guys, whether it be Zay Flowers, Addison, Jackson, or Quentin Johnson, do you think this is a receiving class that warrants a top 10, top 15 pick?
No. No, I don't. Smith and Jigba, I mean, Mace, I don't know how you feel about this. It bothered me whenever he bowed out of the college football playoff. I don't know. The whole thing is strange. McShay had the report on him prior to bowl season about, if he was actually going to be hurt, quote unquote, injured for the bowl season. I don't know. The 2002 campaign for him started as he's probably the top wide receiver in college football. That was the vibe. Addison certainly has all these different qualities too. And then there's Quentin Johnson, who I really like, but then Georgia just shut him down with their defensive backs. So, and he's the tall, lanky guy who is going to get open, but I think a very specific type of receiver for an offense. And I think that's how I view the rest of this, the top end of the wide receivers here. It's very pick the guy that fits your offense and where you have the biggest hole more than it is. Here is the surefire wide receiver who can play any of the three positions on the field when you line up in 11 and can also do various roles for you throughout the offense with the football in his hands. Maybe there's one or two guys like that have shown that in college football, but I think they're all pretty defined on who they are.
And that's my problem, Hutt, with Njigba. As much as McShay may like him or other guys may like him and say, well, listen, this guy, he is a top 10, top 12 pick. But if you look at the numbers are great that he had the year prior, but 90% of his catches were from the slot. He's not a guy that you can line up at all three receiver positions. He's just not. And if I'm drafting a guy that high, I want to be able to stick him outside the whole game if I need to, or put him inside the whole game if I need to. And right now, he's clearly a slot receiver. And there's nothing wrong with that in today's game. But when you're drafting a guy that high, he has to be able to play multiple positions in the receiver room.
Right there with you. And I'm, while you're saying that, I went and pulled up the McShay quote. That, by the way, his family went back at McShay on this. But I think it's important because it was December the 7th when McShay said this. It wasn't right before the college football playoff. It was right. He was trying to determine whether or not Njigba was going to play. The quote was, there are a lot of reports from NFL scouts that I've talked to who say he's healthy enough to play. He's protecting himself for the draft. I got news for every prospect out there. NFL teams know. They know what you had for lunch last Thursday. They're going to know whether you're healthy or not. And if you're healthy enough to play, you need to be out there with your team and play. I would say, for the most part, I buy into that, especially if you're the college football playoff. I'm 100% behind that. That increases with the 12-team playoff, I think. I think we'll see more guys play because of the playoff aspect of the bowl. But for I don't want to rip on the guy if he actually was injured, and I don't blame him if he's, 90% and he doesn't want to play because he's going to be a top 10 pick or whatever they're telling him to be. But, man, I would have a hard time doing that, especially at that position, given the fact that we've seen time and time again, after 2.5 years, receivers want to bump in pay, and it becomes a big standoff.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. He's right. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. Jonathan Hutton with Outkicks, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joins us now. We're hearing a lot about Hendon Hooker. Now, the Titans are scheduled to meet with Hendon Hooker this week. How much do you look into the meetings that the Titans have? Because this time last year, they met with Treylon Burks. They met with Malik Willis. But a lot of teams meet with a lot of guys. How much do you really look into the guys that the Titans are meeting with?
I think it makes a lot of sense for Hooker and the Titans to pair up here in this draft. I'll start by saying that. But keep in mind, all the meeting reports, like Hooker was the first player to meet with the Titans, or the Titans were the first team to meet with Hooker whenever Hooker was at the Senior Bowl. But he can meet with all 32, and all 32 should take the opportunity to chat with every single player there. There's not a limit on that. Combine, different story based on, of course, his knee. And based on location, this visit doesn't count against their number of visits that they can have in the facility because he's the in-state prospect. So they should use all avenues to chat with him and figure out everything, put him on the board, make sure he's a match with Kelly and everything else. But I read into the visits because, and especially the guys who are mocked to go like third to sixth round, because at that point, I think teams are more likely and high probability that they go with the player that matches who they are and the personality and the traits that fit the organization, the coaching staff, the head coach, the general manager, more so than the first or second round picks where, oh, he's the highest guy on our board. By the time the third round rolls around, you go all over the place with projections because it's very difficult to figure out which position of need meets the quality of the football player for that team. So the Titans, if you're looking into trying to read between the lines on Hendon Hooker, you're trying to determine, okay, if we draft at 11, what do we do? If we trade down, who can we get? Is Hendon Hooker our quarterback if we trade back into the first round for the fifth-year option? The Packers are exploring the same possibility with Hendon Hooker. So, yeah, I like the direction of what he could mean to the offense, but I think there's going to be a lot of teams that fall into the Hendon Hooker fan club for what he means on and off the field. And I think he helped himself a ton whenever they made the exception for him to go to the Senior Bowl, because while he couldn't play, they saw how he is on the sideline. They saw what he's like in practice. They saw how he interacted with the coaches. I think all of that is a huge benefit to him because the perception of some is he is in an offense that's the one read, Coach Heupel's in his headset telling him to play, all these different things. And I think he had to show, and he has shown, that he's more than just a one read quarterback and a system guy.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, and Hutt, I'm just curious your philosophy on how you read mock drafts. We had a fun discussion before. We tried to do an over-under on how many mock drafts Todd McShay will have between now and the actual draft. So he's got what? He's got one now, but you know it's going to change a lot, right? And you can find 25, 30 a day probably if you look at it. So how do you try to view those, and what kind of stock do you put in who's doing it?
I put a ton of stock in who's doing it. John McClain mocks the mock every year because but when he was with the Chronicle, and he openly missed this, he's like, I have 17 different mock drafts, and I'm going to have so-and-so taking a different player every time. You know, it's just part fun, part also he's admitting, like, no one really knows how this is going to go down. There's a lot of lying this time of year more than there is truth. So I think you have to remember that. Willie, I put stock into the guys that put out one mock draft, just like I do stock into the fans who have one bracket, right? Because that you're stuck to that. A guy that always comes to mind for me, and his mock draft is released like 7 or 8 days prior to, or maybe sooner than that now, is Charles Davis. Charles puts out his along with two or three others at NFL.com. And when I say two or three other analysts do the same. And I pay more attention to the guys who do it one time than 20 times, because at some point you can't just always link up the same headline with your mock draft if you're doing it since February. You have to have something that makes me, who I've already read the one mock draft from so-and-so, click on the link that says, oh, what's changed? I like it. I like trying to, you know, push down the road and see what teams are thinking. And a lot of times they're just going by position of need, and that's fine. But what we don't know is which of those teams are willing to trade back and settle on their second best option on their board because a quarterback needy team jumps up. All of the trades factor into the mocks, and that's what we don't know.
So if the Titans don't take a quarterback and they are sitting at 11, give me the two or three players that you're honing in on that you like the best.
Well, at that point, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think it's offensive line at that point, Willie, for me. I know that some of the mocks have the Titans going opposite offensive line for like the first couple of picks. I would have a hard time doing that. I would go best available player. And here's the other thing too. No one's talking about defense for them. They do have a pass rush need, and maybe I'm crazy, but if you're going with the best available player, one of those pass rushers at the top is going to be the best available player at 11, because I think we'll see an offensive lineman drafted. We'll see four quarterbacks potentially go by the time the Titans are on the clock at 11. More maneuvering if you have Will Anderson fall, and I say quote-unquote fall, past Indy at 4 or Seattle at 5. Again, there's so many different scenarios. Jalen Carter, where does he go in this draft based on the offseason? And then you add that into, well, where did people have him drafted prior to the offseason? Well, he was ahead of Will Anderson. He's the first defensive player taken.
All right, so Carter's an interesting one. So let's say he would fall to 11. How would you feel about that if you're the Titans?
Oh, I love it. I would view it like Jeffrey Simmons. And you get to pair those two together. I mean,
right. So if you do your homework and you say, look, he screwed up, right? He had a screw up, but that's not what we think his true character is. We know the Georgia thing hasn't exactly worked here in recent times with the first round picks. But if that's your assessment, you would have no trouble picking him at 11.
No trouble. And here's how he was described to me, and I think it's how you would describe Jeffrey Simmons. He is a grizzly bear. The Titans have a knack for wanting those players and finding those guys, especially on the defensive front. And Simmons is the example, but I'm going through not just this. I'm not even saying this coaching regime or this previous general manager. I just say, but and how they're built. I think, man, if he were to fall there, what a gift. And because he's not injured. So, I mean, I don't think he's there. I think a team's trading up for him. And I always use the trade up factor because I think he's valuable. I think that's how I value players. Would I trade up for him? Yes or no? He's a player that's on a short list of guys that you would do that for in this draft. And you would have a pretty good indication already on who he is, because he's not going to visit any other team other than a top 10 pick team. And I don't blame him, because I think we all agree he's a top 10 player, surefire.
Now, outside of Hyatt and Hooker for UT, who do you think is the next guy that would be on the draft board? Is it a Darnell Wright? Is it a Cedric Tillman or Brian Young? Which one of these guys do you think, if indeed Hyatt and Hooker goes first, not necessarily first in the first round, but
right,
first when you talk about UT players, who do you think goes next?
I think it's Darnell Wright. Mm-hmm. There are people out there, there are draft analysts out there who have Wright as the best pro tackle. Now, he's a right tackle, but they feel like he's the consistent guy, and they really like what he's done. I mean, Will Anderson had two games against Tennessee, the most recent two games against Tennessee, where it didn't go well. His stats are not – you watching the game against Tennessee earlier this year at Neyland, I didn't even – at one point I turn around, it's like the third or fourth quarter, I'm like, is Will Anderson playing in this game? Well, he's had games where he hasn't had pressures, at least one pressure, and Darnell Wright is both games. He's facing him both times, and Anderson glows whenever he talks about Darnell Wright. So I think Darnell Wright's the next off the board. And then, I mean, the receivers are interesting, because how do you, Mace, how mm-hmm. do you value Hyatt versus, you know, what you could get? And I don't mean the, a possession receiver that's going to move the chains, but Hyatt's probably going to be a game breaker for you in four or five games. Doesn't mean you win. But he's, I view Jalin Hyatt, because of his speed and his size, to me, he's the guy that's going to be 5 or 6 weeks out of the season really, really good. Mm-hmm. But then you also have options on the Tennessee roster and elsewhere of guys who are going to be very consistent for you week in and week out. And they'll give you 3 or 4 catches per week, maybe not the 10 catch, 200 yard receiving game with 2 touchdowns, but they'll have the consistency for you to help you move the chains. The speed always wins in this, and that's why you're right to mention Jalin Hyatt first.
Yeah, I'm sure he will go before Cedric Tillman, but I just like Cedric Tillman because he reminds me, and I can't think of his name right now, the kid from San Francisco that came out of UT that's playing in San Francisco now. Where you can put him at several different positions and you're still going to get production. Now, he's not going to be your frontline receiver like your number one guy, and yeah. I don't think Hyatt will either. But
you're talking about Jennings.
Yeah, right? Jennings. He reminds me more of a Jennings guy where you can put him anywhere on the field.
And was he drafted, Juwan Jennings?
Yeah, sixth round.
Sixth round. Okay, I knew it was right at the end. Mm-hmm.
So he reminds me more of a guy from a versatility standpoint, where you can put him anywhere on the field and you're going to get production out of him. I don't know if I see that with Hyatt. I think he's a straight line guy. There's a lot he still needs to learn about playing that position in the NFL.
Yeah, but I'm with you on that's a great comparison with Jennings. By the way, Jennings is a seventh round pick. That's crazy.
I love Juwan Jennings.
Yes,
I remember that draft winding down. And there were two guys that had not been picked. It was Juwan Jennings and the kid out of Vanderbilt was Lipscomb. What was his first name?
It's Elijah.
Elijah Lipscomb, who I thought was pretty darn good in college, but I don't think Lipscomb is still playing. And now Jennings has not only shown that he was worth being drafted, but quite a bit more than that.
Well, the mentality, Mace, Willie, and Caroline, I mean, I love what Derek said there, because you can see with Jennings, I'm going back and thinking about the moments, right? AJ's a good example, too. Like, He's a second round pick, but man, that guy, when the game is on the line, Cedric Tillman wanted the football. Mm-hmm. Think about the game against Pitt, at Pitt. Game's on the line. Football's going to him. And Hyatt, for whatever reason, wasn't all that great. Wasn't a first round pick. Wasn't coming out early until this past season. And he admitted like he just didn't take the game seriously and all that. Tillman's the opposite. And I want that in my locker room, and I want that mentality on the field in the fourth quarter where we need, you know, we're down 7 and we need to go score now. or we're down 10 with 4 minutes to go. We need a score and then an onside kick and get the ball back. Who the ball's going to? It's going to him. He's a guy that you can. He's right, moving different ways, and because of that, he's a chess piece. But he's also a winner, and those are great qualities to have.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. And what we have Vanderbilt's own Nate Bargatze. I say Vanderbilt's own massive fan of Vandy. He's coming in studio with us today. Should be fun.
Amazing. We'll be sure to tune in.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, yep. Hutton. Let's get your thoughts on this coming up next. A lot of really good intel and opinions on the upcoming draft potential picks for the Titans from Jonathan Hutton. So we'll get into your thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.